I'm Kevin Davis, and this is the Catholic Family Podcast, and I have such an honor today. I'm joined by three sisters, I should say two sisters of the Sisters of St. Thomas Aquinas, and Mother Mary Teresa. We have Sister Mary Magdalene, Sister Mary Frances, and Mother Mary Teresa, who have joined us today from Brooksville, Florida, to discuss several things, but especially the amazing ceremony that happened already, is it already 2 weeks ago, I believe, recently, in the last 10 days or so, of its the consecration of their church. I got so much going through my mind, I'm trying to remember it all. The consecration of their new church in Brooksville, Florida, which I believe, sisters, you're going to have to correct me if this is right. I believe it was almost 9 hours long. I was unfortunately working through parts of it, but every chance I got, I went to my phone or went to my laptop and was trying to watch as much as I could. It was just unbelievable that the quality of the video and the beauty of the church, the singing, it was truly otherworldly. And that's not hyperbolic. It was something that was, and that was over the internet. It was otherworldly to witness. So sisters, Mother, thank you very much for coming. And I guess, Mother, I'd ask you first, I guess, who are you? Who are the Sisters of St. Thomas Aquinas?
Well, the Sisters of St. Thomas, we are a congregation located in Florida, and we were founded in 2005 by Bishop Selway and Bishop Sanborn. We were founded really for the reason to continue, to continue religious life in these times, and to have as our secondary apostolate the teaching of the youth specifically. So we were founded in 2005. We started with two sisters, myself and one other. We started on a small piece of property, which was donated by a parishioner. And here we are, 19 years later. We have 23 sisters, and we have, owing to the grace of God, just consecrated the Mother House Chapel.
And sister, when we talk about the consecration, which we're going to go into in detail, I believe, I know someone was poking around the internet and could not find this consecration ceremony having been done since Vatican II. Do you know if that's true or not?
I don't know specifically. I know we've talked about it amongst ourselves, and we were conjecturing that most probably that is the case.
And
we definitely were not expecting the 9 hours.
So you expected it to be less. Because I had heard before the ceremony, I think I'd heard it's going to be 5 or 6 hours long. And so I thought, whoa, okay, that's a doozy. That's going to be a hard day. And I came back after the end of the ceremony, and it was 8 hours and 50 minutes or something. How on earth is this happening? And the amazing thing, sisters, I don't know if you all sing in the choir, but I believe the sisters were singing practically throughout. Every time I popped on, the sisters were singing. That was a pretty impressive feat. And was that something that I guess if you didn't know it was going to be 9 hours, as someone who's directed choir a little bit, did you have to kind of ad lib and add on music, or how did that work if it was so much longer than expected?
A little bit, yes. I think for a few of the parts of the consecration, for instance, the anointing of the crosses, we did have to do some repeating of the psalms, and for the most part, you can tell that the music was all, in a sense, planned in such a way that it would coincide with the length of each part of the ceremony. Mm-hmm. So, in the I guess compiling of the rubrics and the music, that I think that was considered. So for the most part we didn't have to, but definitely for the anointing of the crosses, and I thought there was one other part where we had to add some music in.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, sister, the compiling, because I imagine, I guess that's the first question I'd ask for going back to the church itself. How long has the construction been underway for the construction of the church?
So we, actually, to prepare for the consecration, we drew up a little timeline, And I think it ended up being 10 years.
Right.
Wow.
Well, 2013.
10 years from really the first, you know, when we first had the idea to, you know, to build, we had to build something, right? Until today, it was 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So a decade.
Wow. So all that time, all that work and effort and blood and sweat and tears all led to that, to the 9-hour ceremony, which I imagine you sisters will never forget. And I mean, those who had got to experience it. And that was something I was wondering as I was watching, sisters. I'm kind of all over the place, but how many people fit? How many parishioners fit in that church approximately?
So we fit for the ceremony. I think we had about 130 people.
Oh, okay.
In there.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, that was very, that was probably one of the most difficult parts about the ceremony, you know, because it was not geared towards having people attend, making it easy for them, because you had all of these, you know, the people were not allowed in the church until the relics were brought over, right? So the problem was, okay, where do the people go during that time? Because it's Florida, May, they can't stand outside and roast in the heat, you know, so we had to figure that out. And then you have to figure out, okay, how do you clean up the ashes on the floor and set it up as a church for the people to come in while the procession is going over to retrieve the relics and bring them back to the church.
Wow. So just the whole setup for this must have been just unbelievable. So, I mean, how long did that take just to plan, I suppose, the rubrics? I mean, that had to have taken weeks, I'm sure.
Right. I think we started back in March, was that?
I started hearing about it.
February.
Wow,
yes.
That's incredible. Well, and when you watched it, I think that was part of what was really amazing about it, though, was the length of it. That, you know, we're used to it when we go to these ceremonies, especially during Holy Week. You know, Holy Week is much longer, and so we make it through it, and we say, wow, that was very long. But there's still something that's so impactful with Holy Week, because you get almost that ancient feeling, right? I think you get that kind of like, wow, this is that real ancient ceremonies of the church, the real lasting liturgy. And so when you watch again this ancient, you could just tell again, even online, how that's the Catholic Church. It was so incredible to watch, because this is something that's happening in Florida. I'm in Germany, but I could still tell with a beautiful production process and everything that went into it, just that's Catholic. And I think sisters and mother, I'd imagine you would agree with me that that's such an important thing for who we are, you know, as traditional Catholics. You know, we get called sede vacantis, but what we are, of course, are Catholics. And I think to have a ceremony like that, that's such a step. I mean, that was just incredibly impactful for me. Do you feel the same?
Yes. Yes, it was really no words to describe what it meant really to all of the sisters, you know, to go through the ceremony, and then after the ceremony to look at the chapel and to ponder what had just taken place. You know, before it was a building, and now it is a church, a chapel.
And maybe, Mother, I'm sorry, go ahead, sister, please.
That the full schedule was supposed to have Vespers and Benediction after the dinner. And I think up until then, everyone had been so busy for the past several months. But at Vespers, when we completed it, we sang the Te Deum in the church, and the Blessed Sacrament is present. And I felt like at that moment, it finally, for the first time ever, I looked at it like a church.
Wow.
I was looking around praying, you know, as I do, as we do every day. But it was, that for me was...
It was completely different.
Yes.
As they say.
Interesting.
Made new.
Wow.
It was a new building.
Wow. And so what's the difference then? And I don't know if you're the ones to ask for this even, but I mean, what is the difference between that and say all the other churches that we attend? I mean, I'm sure Bishop Selway has his own church in Florida, and Bishop Sanborn is in Pennsylvania now. What's the difference between that and having that church, what's the word? It's not blessed, but it's not, it's also not consecrated. Do you know the difference between the two?
Blessed, yes, blessed. The altar can be dedicated, right? Uh-huh. I think for the, you mean the difference between a church that is consecrated and is not?
Correct.
Well, I think it's primarily, you know, the fact that for something to be consecrated, right, it means that it is set aside as something sacred for that purpose alone. And because of that, when you pray in a consecrated church, you might say you do receive more graces than you would if you were not in a consecrated church. There's more protection in that church, in that place there from the devil than in any other place. So you might say it's easier to pray in a consecrated church.
Mm-hmm.
I think all the sisters commented on that.
Yes.
It's easier to pray in that chapel.
Well, that's so interesting. I'm sorry, go ahead, sister.
Also, too, just the material aspect of it, because it's set aside, the requirements to ensure it is permanently consecrated to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that also materially makes it different, the walls being of solid stone and everything.
Yes.
And I think that's an amazing thing that you see, that it's something I talk about on the podcast all the time, this battle that we have against, you know, kind of good versus evil. And I think we often think of it as this, of course, it is a spiritual battle. But I think of it, or many people think of it, as this kind of unreal, kind of in the clouds. It's not an actual thing. And I think when you see something like this happen, and then you can still, you actually go in and actually feel the difference, the actual grace, the actual spirit, you know, that's there. I think these types of things show and they prove that it's real. You know, like grace is real. It's an actual. It's I guess it's not tangible. You can't physically feel it, but I think that's an incredible. It's an incredible story to hear that, because I think, again, it gives validation to what we do. I mean, who are we? Well, why are we here? I mean, of course, as Catholics. And I think it's a nice thing to see too, that the beauty. I'm an old fashioned guy too, when it comes to music, especially. And I was commenting to, I forget who it was, one of the priests, I think. I was just like, the sisters have the greatest tastes in architecture and music I've ever seen in my life. And so, I mean, just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, and I know my opinion doesn't matter, but I approve. I absolutely approve. And so Mother, maybe I'll ask you that. I mean, what went into that? What went into the design of the church? I'll ask that first. I mean, was that something, obviously you must have hired someone professional, but who thought that up?
Oh, it's a long story.
I believe it.
You have to have a long, long
interview. it was a long road, you know, because we couldn't find anybody to really design what we wanted. You know, Bishop Selway always told us that, you know, sisters, it's important that, you know, what we design is going to lead us up to heaven, right? Be uplifting, as you said, right? So the architecture uplifts us and is a reflection of the beauty and the glory of God. So we knew that it had to be Gothic, right? And we knew we had to find windows, right? Because Gothic is the soaring windows and the soaring ceilings. So we looked for, you know, some architects who specialized in Gothic architecture, but they just, it just didn't work out, you know. At that point, we kind of forced,
right,
we told Sister Mary Frances she had to learn SketchUp, and she almost lost her vocation because of it.
I believe it.
I remember when I was stationed in Arizona when Sister Mary Frances started the design, and what's the name of the, is it SketchUp?
SketchUp,
the name of the program. I remember overhearing that you forgot to save your work,
oh,
and
yes.
there, I don't know if there was a power outage or something shut down,
oh, no.
But I heard comments. I don't know if they were exaggerated or not, but they said she might never recover.
Oh, no.
No, no.
Oh, no.
About a couple years.
Oh, so really, the you sisters designed that church. Is that what I'm understanding here?
In the end,
pretty much, yes. So wow. Sister Mary Frances came up with the initial inside and outside schematic design, and
wow.
Then we took that to an architect and asked him to do design development. Actually, really not for the church, because we didn't have the money at the time. You know, we thought, okay, well, we've designed the church. You know, we now need to get help with designing the living quarters. So we hired him to do that. And then also after he was done with that, to design the outside of the church. But as soon as he got to that point, it just became very clear that it would not work. You know, we ended up going around in circles. He would say, oh, you can't achieve that width with that height. It's not going to work. It's going to look horrible. And so every session we would have with the architect, we would end up arguing about how we wanted to stick with the schematic design, and we don't want to veer from that. And he said, come on, sisters, what you draw up on paper can't necessarily be built. And
is that a dare?
Like, okay, well then we're gonna do it.
Wow.
So really then we were, by divine providence, we found, you know, people along the way to help make it possible. You know, the builder was very patient and willing to help us design the church as the Comet was being built. And then we found a mason who had the ability to work in CAD as well. He actually was Bulgaria?
Hungary.
Mm-hmm. Hungary. He's a third generation mason. And
wow.
He was able to take what was designed, put it into CAD, and then he actually had a brother who could produce the molds and so forth. So it kind of just came together, you know.
And I visited, I was stationed in Arizona, unfortunately, most of the time, by divine providence, of course, but I would visit occasionally, and once in a while when I would visit, something would happen, and I'm sure it didn't really impress you very much because you were there the whole time, but I remember two things. I was here when they were trying to design the asp of the church, the crowning jewel centerpiece?
The apse.
Okay.
The rib vault of the apse.
Yes. And there was the man who was trying to do it. He did it, ripped it apart, did it again, ripped it apart. And Mother was just saying it's not right. And I think on his fifth try, he got it and he broke down in tears. He said it was the greatest moment of his life.
Wow. That's incredible. It made me wonder when you're saying, you know, it was hard to find a designer, because I mean, how do you Google someone, you know, that's a designer for a Gothic church? Because I mean, no one makes them anymore. Right. I mean,
yeah.
it is really, I mean, you look at the modern churches and the churches, I mean, of course that's with quotation marks, they don't look like churches. They aren't actually churches. And that's, I mean, fittingly so. And so I imagine it must be something that almost doesn't exist anymore, but it's another beautiful picture that I've had in my head, because my impression of Florida, I've never been to Florida, but my impression, of course, is alligators and humidity and stuff. So I just picture this gorgeous Gothic cathedral, and you got a swamp of alligators right out in the backyard, you know. But hopefully everything's safe over there. Maybe you need some extra ushers for the alligators. But that's a wonderful story. That's incredible, and I think as you tell the story, it sounds like something I've read in books about churches being built, you know, and this, you know, that it gets done because it needs to get done. Right. I think that's how God works. Right. I mean, God's providence is, it doesn't usually work with the first try. It's that perseverance. It's that, you know, that the sisters say it's going to get done. And so it gets done. And that's it's another thing that I think we need to take in our lives. Right. I mean, remember,
yes,
hey,
I think that was a big, one of the main impressions that a lot of us had was, this is truly the work of God, because there is no possible way it would have happened without the grace of God, you know, every step of the way.
Yeah, there were several things that is nothing short of miraculous. I think finding the windows was a little miracle in and of itself, because there's some of the most beautiful stained glass I've ever seen. Maybe I just like style,
yeah.
But
we're finding a full set
of windows, perfect number we needed, perfect size,
yeah.
All of the saints we needed, St. Thomas, St. Agnes, St. Cecilia, the two that are in the altar. Yeah, just amazing. And then
they were used windows, sister. Sorry.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. That's incredible. Okay. There you go. Exactly. Divine providence. Boy, how does that happen? Boy, that's, and so they were, so you found these after you built the window structures, you found windows that fit in.
No, we actually, we went in the reverse order.
Okay.
So again, we knew, okay, it's Gothic. We need to find windows. So mm-hmm. Sister Mary Frances had the design in SketchUp, and you know, the design was, I don't know really how far along it was at that point.
We didn't get very far because we realized almost right away with that we had to have the glass. If you didn't
yeah.
have beautiful glass,
mm-hmm.
we couldn't do the structure.
Right. But I think we had divided up into bays, right? And
oh,
then
okay.
I think we had said, okay, we need a set of 17 for the top, and they need to be about this height.
Yes.
And then we need a set of 11 for the bottom, and they need to be about this height.
Mm-hmm.
So then the search began for the windows, and kind of the design stopped at that point because we knew,
mm-hmm.
okay, we need to find these windows before we can move forward. And providentially, I think within 2 weeks,
it was 2 weeks,
we
wow.
found both sets complete.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find church windows, sister? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, the first set was just from the ecclesiologist. He was a church reclaimer who was in Chicago at the time. I think he's since gone out of business. But we looked there, and he had a set. And then Adrian Hamers happened to email Bishop Sanborn, I think, at the time, saying, I just got this set in from, I can't remember where it was. The windows were originally from England, 1870.
Wow.
That was the bottom set. And,
wow.
So,
that's amazing.
And then the top set actually is from Germany. They're Franz Mayer windows, 1890.
Well, then they must be good, sister. that's amazing. And so I guess after that, I got to go real quickly to the choir, because the choir again was just what really struck me, because again, just the Gregorian, you know, of course I've listened to your sister's videos on Twitter or on YouTube. And I mean, it's just magnificent. And I think again, what strikes me is that what would had been a shame. I'll tell a real quick story. We were in Loreto this summer with my family, and beautiful place. I mean, just an incredible experience to go there in the church, and obviously a big, huge, gigantic cathedral. It's magnificent. And they were having a Novus Ordo mass, a ceremony, whatever you want to call it. And they had some sort of modern music, you know, and it wasn't rock and roll or anything. It was some sort of choral modern music. And it was just terrible. It was just like in this beautiful church, and everything just didn't work. It just, and I don't think that's even just because I'm a traditionalist. It's just because it was like, it's not made for this, that this church is made for something else. And then I heard you, sister, singing Gregorian chant in Palestrina, and it's just like this immediate boom, you know, that's it. And it's a remarkable thing, that good taste, sisters. That's all I can say. But I guess my question would be, okay, so when you're preparing for this, I mean, were your binders for music just this thick, or how do you get the music for such a ceremony?
That was interesting. So the only source for the chant was actually the old Roman pontifical from the, I think it was late 1800s. But of course it's, the notation is different. It was written differently. So we started practicing. Well, there was so much going on that practice kept getting pushed and pushed and pushed. So we started practicing, and we realized it's very, it was more difficult reading that chant. So at that point, we went back to the drawing board, and Sister Mary Margaret started researching to try to find the updated versions of some of these chants. And so in the end, we kind of pieced together, you know, we had to compile the new chants we were able to find updated, and then with the old ones that we couldn't find an updated version of. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a process. And then from there, I think the polyphony schedule, all of that, those were pieces we had previously learned. And so that wasn't quite as difficult, but
The polyphony is actually the easiest, because a lot of the chant, usually we're used to knowing the chant practically by heart, because we sing Divine Office and Mass, but a lot of the chant we had not seen before. So we didn't have to find it. It was all proper to the ceremony, but the notation was different. You can't sight read it easily. Also, it's old, so you can't tell if the note is below the line or above the line.
The practices with that chant were deplorable. And I think after the third one,
we realized
we need to find a different notation that we're used to, the Solemn notation, or we're not going to be able to pull it off. Because usually we're able to pull it off and kind of get through it, but we realized with that notation, we couldn't.
It's amazing when you look at these old missals or old books, German especially. You look at old German from 100 years ago, and it's I can't read almost a letter. It's just incredible. It's a totally different look and feel to it. So I imagine Gregorian, I don't even want to consider. Gregorian's already hard enough for me at all. I imagine not being able to read it would be pretty tough. I have to say my highlight that I got to watch, I want to go back and try to watch at least most of the ceremony again, because I missed a lot of it. But when I think it was the introit. Remember, it was the offertory when you came in with the spem and allium from Talis. Oh, that was just another one of those moments. Again, it was just incredible that I couldn't believe that I was watching over my phone and I was getting chills. And it was like, wow. So I mean, the people who are there, I can't even imagine how that must have felt, because it's like a different time, and it brings you back to this amazing imagination and wonder of what our faith is and what it's been for thousands of years. And it was unbelievable. And so how did you select these songs, the hymns, I suppose?
Let's see. Well, the chant is all prescribed, right, for the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
The spem and allium
bishop
requested
okay
by Bishop Selway, and
mm-hmm.
We had sung that once before for his consecration. And in 2018, so we knew, okay, well, we could fulfill that request without too much trouble. And then the Mass, I'm really not sure why we chose the bird Mass for four voices.
I think that was
just a nice Mass.
The sisters had requested that one. So.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, whatever it was, it definitely worked. And I think, again, you see the divine providence kind of guiding the way to just a wonderful ceremony. And I guess on that note, I'm sure you sisters have places to go and things to do, but I do want to send people over to your website at sistersofaquinas.org. I know people can donate over there. As we see a magnificent church and convent and school, well, these things all, of course, need your help and need a little bit of money to run them and to build them. So please go support the sisters. If there's anything on earth that is worth supporting, it is sisters teaching our children, because, well, of course, you know, that is the most important. And that's something I would love in the future, sisters or mother, to talk in the future about what you offer for your school, because I think it's something that I've got two children. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and we live in Germany where homeschooling is illegal. Thank you, Adolf, so-and-so. And from that, it's really made us really question the entire idea of schooling or of living in Germany and all this. And it's a mess. And so I've of course come across you sisters, and I heard a rumor, I don't want to get into this topic, but just real briefly, that you sisters don't use the modern education, but more of the classical education. Is that true?
Go ahead, sister.
Yes, that's true. Yes, so in some things we do pull from current curricula as long as it aligns with the classical goals. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, math and science. But yes, we try to fulfill the end of a classical education.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Ah, I love it. Well, sisters, I'll have to beg you another time to go into that topic because, again, it is maybe one of the most important topics we can have, again, how we educate our children, because as we see in this world, boy, oh boy, don't send them to public school. So we'll save that for another time. But sisters and mother, I'll send you one last question I'd like to ask. Is there any other story or anything that happened in the building of this? It was, as one of you mentioned, it was almost miraculous steps along the way. Is there anything that you missed or that you'd like to share with people that would help to inspire them and show them a little bit of the process that went into this 10-year building of a church and consecration that happened just, 2 weeks ago?
Wow, that's a hard question.
I know. I'm putting you on the spot, sisters. I'm putting it on the spot.
I one does not sleep out over another, you know, after 10 years. I mean,
sure.
I would say, I mean, as Sister mentioned, for me, the highlight of everything was the Te Deum after the ceremony, you know, seeing that it was, the project was finally completed.
Mm-hmm. It's all right, sisters. No worries. I put you on the spot. That's actually a good question. Is that Te Deum? Is that available to see online, or was that not recorded?
No,
I actually
did. You record it?
A little bit of it.
But it's not online. But yes, I snuck a little. I had Sophia Rendon behind me, one of our students.
Okay.
And with her help, a little bit was recorded.
Got it.
Just for the archives.
Well, maybe sisters, if you get a free 15 minutes sometime and you can record that for us, we'll put it at the end of this video. That would be wonderful because of course it's the praise of God and kind of the wondrous. Yeah. I mean, how it's a glorious hymn of how great God is and how good we have it, I suppose. And I think that's something we need to remember in this evil world. I think I really appreciated you sisters and mother coming on to show that there is beauty in this world and there's beauty in the church. It exists. We are traditional Catholics and we are living our faith and we're living the faith that our ancestors lived and we hope to continue to do so. Sisters, mother, thank you so much for being on. I very much hope we can talk again sometime again to talk about education or whatever other topics you want to talk about, sisters. That would be fantastic. Until next time, God bless you, and thank you so much for all that you do.
God bless you. Thank you. God bless you.